so no one would know how tired they've grown of talking and telling their lies. Oh, we got no health insurance, no cellular service, no disease they can cure. But we need more money to burn, so each person must learn the dollar amount they are worth.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and we'll be talking about Syria in the next segment in 20 minutes' time. But joining us now is Wendell Potter, who's the author of Deadly Spin, an Insurance Company Insider Speaks Out on How Corporate PR is Killing Healthcare and Deceiving Americans. He's a senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy, where he moved after a long career in the for-profit health industry as the chief corporate spokesperson at Cigna Corporation and as head of corporate communications at Humana, Inc. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wendell Potter.
Ian, thank you very much. Good to be back.
Good to talk to you again, Wendell. And unfortunately, all of that effort that the president and the Democrats put into passing the Affordable Care Act, by a whisker, could be just completely blown away by the Supreme Court. Yesterday's questioning and arguments on the part of the Obama administration were less than sterling. And then today, the attorney arguing for the 26 states against so-called Obamacare is arguing before the Supreme Court, saying if the individual mandate is unconstitutional, and the rest of the act cannot stand. So that was pretty much the subject of discussion in today's Supreme Court, that taking it away would completely gut it. So what's your sense of where this conversation is heading, even though we know that just because of performances of attorneys before the Supreme Court and questions from the justices themselves don't necessarily tell you exactly how they're going to rule?
And that's right. And I continue to think that they probably will uphold the constitutionality of the law. Keep in mind that the challenges have gone through lower courts, and more courts have upheld the constitutionality of the law than have declared unconstitutional, including the individual mandate. And that includes from judges who have been conservative judges. So these same questions and these same observations have been made by other judges that have ultimately declared the law constitutional. But we never know. My guess is as good as anybody's, but I tend to think that the justices, when they sit right down to determine what to do, they will have to realize that the health care for more than 300 million people is essentially in their hands, and certainly for the 50 million people who don't have coverage, and for many others who are underinsured. In fact, I think they probably will realize that if they declare it unconstitutional, it's going to create great chaos in the health insurance market, and I also think they realize that health insurance companies, frankly, need the individual mandate for their business models to be sustainable. If it's declared unconstitutional, I think it's very reasonable to assume that the end of the health insurance market as we know it will see that sooner rather than later.
Well, we've had some surprises from the Supreme Court fairly recently with Citizens United, so they can do radical and unexpected things. And even though, there's nothing from today's Supreme Court arguments to leave one with much hope here. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, basically, in trying to defend this attack on the Affordable Care Act, says that if the central requirement, the so-called individual mandate, was deemed unconstitutional, the court would have to decide between a wrecking operation and a salvage job. Believe it or not, Wendell, some Democratic strategists are saying that this might be a good thing, that if this were to happen, this could give the president something to run on in November, you know, saying that, you know, that those people that are now young people who are on their parents' health care, that's going to be taken away, and those with pre-existing conditions will have their health care taken away, and they'll be able to paint the Republicans as the bad guys. But the reality is, this, I think, would have the opposite effect, surely. It would make the president look impotent and unable to deliver.
It's hard to say, and it would certainly be something that would have to be handled very skillfully. But keep in mind, if it's declared unconstitutional, we'll have headline after headline about what the unraveling actually is, what the consequences of that unraveling would be. Point up, I think, the importance. It would take people back to a reminder of why we had to have health care reform in the first place. So it can go either way. What has struck me is that the Solicitor General, who's been arguing the government's case before the Supreme Court, has not been all that persuasive and doesn't seem to have been all that articulate in making the strong case and a persuasive case to the court. And that seems to be a continuation, frankly, of the administration's ineptness in many ways of communicating about the Affordable Care Act. It's little wonder that 2 years after the passage of the legislation, a majority of Americans, when polled, still say they are opposed to the law.
Well, that's always been the mystery of how this administration, from the very outset, were never explained what they were doing and why they were doing what they were doing, and why they put Max Baucus in charge of it, and why it took all this time, and why single payer was never even on the table, and why they didn't take the simpler approach, which is expanding on the existing government program that wouldn't be facing these challenges, Medicare. And then another question is, why did they backload all of the benefits so that it's not until, 2019 or something before people really, the average Americans will be able to recognize that this is a good thing for them, that they're actually, short of a more ideal coverage like single pay would provide, that at least they'd be getting a better deal. The only people who are getting a better deal now are the parents, the kids under 26, being able to have their parents' coverage, and people with pre-existing conditions. But you don't hear a lot about that. All you hear is this constant drumbeat of negativity.
You do, and it's clear that the president was very ill-advised, and maybe some of these decisions were his. And I suspect that more than likely they were recommendations from advisors who felt they knew what they were doing, but certainly did not, in terms of developing the strategy for the actual legislation itself. Both in the White House and in the Congress, you're right. Max Baucus kept holding out and delaying work on the bill to the point that apparently assuming or thinking that there could be some bipartisan support when that was never really going to be in the cards. It was just one strategic blunder after another. What we wound up with was a bill that was with the individual mandate at its core, which the president, when he was campaigning for president, said he was against, and he was for the public option. But based on advice from his strategist and from his advisors, and clearly intense lobbying and very effective lobbying from the health insurance industry, we got what we wound up with. And we have seen during the debate and since then that there has just been a lack of a strategy to communicate the benefits of the law. So, yes, put a lot of blame on the administration and members of Congress for not planning this very well at all.
So if the president, coming into this, wanted to have the public option, which is a kind of a step in the direction of a single payer, and wasn't able to do it. And that was probably because somebody told him early in his administration that you don't have a lot of power. The real people that run America are the big, powerful corporations. You've got to join up with them. Otherwise, you'll get nowhere. So he then decides to go along with what they want, which is the very thing that's under threat now, the individual mandate, because it's a guarantee for insurance companies if everybody's covered. That's good for them. They obviously won the round, but then they seem to turn on him at the same time. So walk us through the mentality, since you work for the two of the biggest insurance companies for many, many years, and know apart from greed, what other motives are involved here?
Well, it is satisfying Wall Street's expectations and satisfying the shareholders' expectations. That's what is really at the heart here. It's not determining what is in the best interest of the people who are enrolled in their health plans or the population as a whole. What happened is that the president was convinced that that Washington is indeed controlled by special interests. It's why deals were cut with the drug companies and the hospitals and the doctors, as even before the first draft of the legislation was written, and there had to be negotiations apparently with the insurance companies because much of the bill involves insurance reform. The insurance companies going into reform, they felt that some kind of reform was inevitable, so they wanted to shape the discussions and shape public opinion, and they were very determined that the individual mandate be a central part of it, and they were also equally determined that the public option not be in the final bill. They were very skillful. They knew exactly who to send to the White House to represent the industry. They knew exactly who to work on Capitol Hill, and they got what they wanted. What they they had to live with some things they don't want. They would rather not have had the ban on pre-existing conditions. They'd rather not have had the other consumer protections and things that really benefit consumers. Their game plan is to try to make sure that this bill goes forward with the individual mandate, and then to try to elect as many friendly members of Congress, or re-elect them, and to replace Democrats as best they can, so that the next Congress and the next president will begin stripping out the consumer protections. That is what they really want, and that could be, absolutely the worst nightmare for consumers.
Again, I speak with Wendell Potter, who is a senior fellow in healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. He moved there after a long career in the for-profit health industry as a chief corporate spokesman at Cigna Corporation and as head of corporate communications at Humana, Inc. So the insurance companies basically had to make Obama turn 180 degrees away from what he wanted to do and accept the reality of what they wanted to do. And their centerpiece is the very thing under attack now, which is the individual mandate. That is what they wanted. It's a giveaway to them. It means that everybody in the country has got to carry insurance, which means millions and millions of customers for them. So is it possible that they're that cynical, that they don't mind the Supreme Court shredding this and basically killing this bill? I mean,
they need this legislation. They need this law because they realize, the top executives do, that the business models of the insurance companies are not sustainable. They have shown they've shown that they are not able to control medical costs. The way they've been able to reap their profits in recent years is by just constantly jacking up rates, making people and employers pay more, and also by shifting more and more of the cost of health care from them to us by moving us into higher and higher deductible plans. That's not ultimately sustainable. We've been seeing over the past several years that more and more small businesses are not able to offer coverage, which is one of the reasons why we have now 50 million people without coverage. They've been refusing to sell coverage to more and more people. And when you do that, and when you also keep shifting more and more the cost of care, unless there is a mandate, people are just increasingly going to say, I can't afford this. It's not of value to me. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, obviously, again, in trying to understand, Wendell Potter, why the people who designed this bill have not been able to, one, explain it to the public, two, explain its virtues to the public, as slim as they are, and three, defend it, And I'm just astounded that they've created this mechanism in order to get the individual mandate, to get everybody to join an insurance pool with the so-called penalties, which is at the heart of what the Supreme Court's talking about. Obviously, the conservatives on the Supreme Court are talking, they say it's all about the Constitution, but it's like everything that seems to go through that court, they dress it up in all kinds of lofty legalese. But at the end of the day, the conservatives vote for power and privilege, the connected over the alienated, the rich over the poor, the corporation over the union, et cetera. I mean, there's just no mystery about their pattern of voting. And so it serves them to talk in these very lofty constitutional terms. But at the end of the day, there are very few people talking about the heart and soul of what's involved here, and that is the quality of life in America and the health of millions and millions of Americans. And, you know, why they didn't, for example, fund it through a tax credit, which would have avoided the very arguments, because I find most of what the conservatives are arguing is just phony. They're just acting at the behest of the powerful. They simply don't want to take care of anybody but themselves.
I think I don't disagree with you, but they're pragmatic people. I think part of what you've been hearing from the justices is just for the base, if you will, for the say things that will make the conservatives happy, to please those who are saying this is a bad law. And at the end of the day, I think that they will uphold it. And here's why: they have to be smart enough to realize that by declaring it unconstitutional, it's going to undermine the so-called free market of health insurance, and it is just not sustainable. And the best way for them to hasten the day for us to get single payer, in my view, is to declare it unconstitutional. Again, they have to be smarter to know that the current business model of health insurance is not sustainable, and it will just unravel. It will collapse, and we will have millions and millions more people who are uninsured, and millions of people who are on the hook to pay a lot more for health care when they get sick.
Well, Wendell Potter, just in closing then, do you think that maybe this could be a blessing in disguise? I mean, single payer wasn't, you know, maybe in what Obama wished, or at least he indicated he might wish it. It was never on the table, never seriously discussed. If it could come back in this kind of Pavlovian way when the whole thing just collapses and out of the ashes is born something that's actually going to work, you're saying that could be the unintended consequences, but the people that are pushing the Affordable Care Act, which is going to benefit the insurance companies, the insurance companies are too smart to allow this to happen. Is that a summary?
That's right. But this may be beyond the power of the insurance companies to influence the court. You don't know what it's going to do, but that's why I do think it probably will be upheld. If it's declared unconstitutional, I think you're exactly right. We will then have to have a serious discussion about the best way to bring people into coverage and to control costs, and single payer will have to be part of that discussion finally.
But do you think the president at that point, Wendell, could go to the American public and say, look, the powerful interest in this country, the 1%, have struck again, and I'm sorry I did my best, but I wish I would have done what I originally intended, and now I'm going to do what I originally intended.
That's exactly what he better do. He ought to do. He ought to be the guy who many of us thought would be president.
I see. So you think, just in terms of the politics of it, that you could turn this defeat and humiliation into a victory if you're the president of the United States?
I think so. I think it absolutely could be done, and I think it would be an opportunity to point to the power of the special interest, because that, Ian, is really why we are in this predicament. It is because, as you noted, politicians and the members of the Congress and the President don't control Washington. It is controlled by special interests who have become increasingly powerful. And this could be a way of showing just how corrupting our system has become, or corrupting this unlimited power and influence and the corruption of unlimited money, just what it is costing us as a country.
Well, Wendell Potter, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Wendell Potter, who's the author of Deadly Spin, an insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. He's a senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy, where he moved after a long career in the for-profit health industry as a chief corporate spokesperson at Cigna Corporation and as head of corporate communications at Humana, Inc. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about Syria.
Idiot wind blowing in through the front door. Idiot wind blowing in from the back. Idiot wind blowing in from every crevice, every crack. Anybody wanna tell it like it is to each other? Like you would to a sister or a brother. It could be said, Cosmo Ball.